just a simple example of A-level versus the IB. So IB has got their children are supposed to study six subjects. Then there is a core component of the extended essay, theory of knowledge and creativity, activity and service. Whereas in the case of A-level, the number of subjects come down almost to half, three or a four, depending upon what the child has to study. So in the A-level, the child may pick up, say, three subjects and do a depth study in those specific subjects and try to apply to university and try to get a mastery in those subjects. Whereas in the case of an IB, because you are studying six subjects across the six groups, the child has the option to, in those 2 years program, to study about those six subjects. And while they are studying during the 2 years program, they may actually enjoy doing two or three subjects. And when they go to university, they only pick up those two or three subjects. There are more options in the IB. Similarly, in the case of a CBSE, when you come to year 11, obviously you decide whether you're going to humanities or going to sciences or going to the commerce stream. So the moment you decide it is science, commerce or humanities, you're almost aligned to actually go and study in those streams.
Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
I'm Himani.
And we are parents just like you.
Always on a lookout. So come join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow inspiring parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Visit partnersinupbringing.com for podcasts, videos, blogs and to connect with experts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app, Partners in Upbringing, your trusted partner in your parenting journey.
We are thrilled and super motivated to share that Partners in Upbringing was ranked as a number one podcast in the parenting category by Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for your love. Please continue to support us and share the link of this episode with your friends and family and help us reach more parents. We promise to bring you inputs and advice from the best parenting experts on a variety of topics. Thank you once again. We are truly grateful.
While choosing a school for our child, the most important aspect that we parents consider is choosing the right curriculum, the right board. With IB, American, British, Singaporean, Indian curriculums, that too with CBSE and ICSE options, it does get confusing and we don't know which one will suit our child, his learning style, match our expectations. What will be the impact on their higher studies? Does the curriculum have the right balance of academics, personality development and physical activities? It's always a question.
So, to give us clarity and set our expectations right, in today's episode of Partners in Upbringing, we have with us a very special guest, a senior educator who holds a master's degree in educational leadership and administration from the University of Bangalore and has over 25 years of experience in the education sector across India, New Zealand, and Singapore. He also has over 15 years of experience in the gifted education domain. He is currently the senior principal of one of the leading schools in Singapore, NPS International. Let's welcome Mr. Chris Bhatt. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Partners in Upbringing.
Hi, such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, Kalyani. Thank you, Himani. It's a pleasure being part of this platform to discuss about the future of university, colleges and application and all those key decisions the children and parents will be making in maybe down the line. Yeah.
So to begin with, could you tell us how does a curriculum really influence a child's future?
A very interesting question. When you say curriculum, I put it in a broader sense. I look at a broader curriculum, well-rounded curriculum. So a well-rounded curriculum obviously will include a number of subjects. So a child who is going to take these subjects obviously need to be good at what he or she is studying, need to have a passion to study something, what they think they like to do it. At the same time, they have to look at, say, in 7 years or 8 years' time, what will be there outside in the world for them to go and study so that at the end of those university degrees, they can come back and contribute to the society. So that is one of the key points of the curriculum. The second thing is, you know, I always use the word learning subject, knowing concept is one part of doing the college degrees. At the same time, what are those skills, what are those transferable skills that they can take forward so that wherever they are living, wherever they are working, there is the transfer of the skill, what they learned in the university, into the work field, thereby to the society. So when we talk about the transferable skills, the World Economic Forum has put across in the 2030 world goals, the skill goal, what they talk about is creative skills, collaboration skills, communication skills, problem-solving skills, and all of these are key skills. So when the child chooses the curriculum, in addition to what subject they study, they should also look at these 21st century skills so that, as I said, they succeed in that university, they succeed in what they are studying. At the end of those 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, depending upon what degree course they are studying, they feel happy and comfortable to go out there and do work. So, as I said, curriculum, if you look at that, you can basically put it, that's one aspect of it. Secondly, when you're choosing a curriculum, it's also important that the teacher plays a very, very important role. I may like physics, but if I get a physics teacher who is not helping me out in learning and understanding those concepts, then I may not actually enjoy the subject. If I'm not enjoying the subject, I may not do well in the subject. If I don't do well in the subject, obviously, I may not learn what I wanted to learn. So second important point when I look at the holistic idea of the curriculum is the role of the teacher. The third key under the curriculum, I also put it here as the environment. So the environment, is it helpful for me as a student wherever I am? Is it helping me? Am I getting the benefit? Is a school is quite safe for me? Am I feeling happy to go into those classrooms? Is a classroom a welcoming place? Are there informations available for me which I want to gather, which I want to acquire, which I want to take it forward? Has the school got those resources for me to actually improve the skills which I already have got so that I can get better at what I'm doing? So if I were to summarize all of that into three key areas, the curriculum of course influences the college admissions and also what I want to study at the university. And it is the teacher and the environment will actually sit under the curriculum as the two key sub-items which is going to influence the child's future when they go into university and then further down the line into job market. Yeah.
So Chris, can you elaborate a little bit on how the options open up for higher education depending on the curriculum?
Okay. Again, quite interesting. If a child is studying, let me take it in our school, we offer in the senior school in year 11 and 12, we offer IB diploma program as well as the CBSE curriculum. So the CBSE curriculum is as rigorous as the IB diploma program. And similarly, obviously, you've got ICSE, you've got the American board, you may have the A levels, all of these. These are rigorous curriculums. Each curriculum has got its own strength. Now, at the end of the day, it is me as a student, whether am I able to, let me take just a simple example of A level versus the IB. So IB has got their children are supposed to study 6 subjects. Then there is a core component of the extended essay, theory of knowledge and creativity, activity and service. Whereas in the case of A-level, the number of subjects come down almost to half, 3 or 4, depending upon what the child has to study. So in the A-level, the child may pick up, say, 3 subjects and do a depth study in those specific subjects and try to apply to university and try to get a mastery in those subjects. Whereas in the case of an IB, because you are studying 6 subjects across the 6 groups, the child has the option to, in those 2 years program, to study about those 6 subjects. And while they are studying during the 2 years program, they may actually enjoy doing 2 or 3 subjects. And when they go to university, they only pick up those 2 or 3 subjects. There are more options in the IB. Similarly, in the case of a CBSE, when you come to year 11, obviously you decide whether you're going to humanities or going to sciences or going to the commerce stream. So the moment you decide it is science, commerce or humanities, you're almost aligned to actually go and study in those streams. Now, every school, of course, in our school and every other school has got what we call as a college counseling team that guides and supports the children in school on a regular basis. At the same time, also support the parents in making appropriate decisions. So studying a particular stream may help to some extent to study or choose a proper degree course or in the university or the college. It is not necessary that can I change in the middle? So suddenly, suppose a child is studying in 9 and 10 CBSE, decides after reading through so many newspapers or listening to university talks, wants to change to an IB curriculum. So will that have an extra support, or will that child may do better just because they have shifted the IB? No, it is because the child decided or to find something different so that they want to study a different kind of curriculum in the university. It to some extent may, but personally, if I feel individual courses offered by various boards have their own strengths and merits, but at the end of the day, it comes back to me as a student to see what works for me, and I have to choose only that particular subject. I always, sometimes in a very lighter sense, I say, a course or a subject is kind of love, whereas the university is infatuation. So I would rather say you have to go with the love, not with the infatuation. Sometimes infatuation is good, but at the end of the day, there are so many other factors that influence. Whereas you love something, you do that particular course and move on, which will definitely help you. So as I said, let me to summarize that, yes, individual boards have a strength. Going back to a simple question is, like suppose American boards.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
There are schools offer American curriculum. There are Australian International School offers Australian curriculum. So will that help them to study in the universities in the US and Australia? The answer is yes. But at the end of the day, whether I go to Australia or to US by studying the Australian curriculum or an American curriculum, the AP or any other American curriculum, it's me who is going to study at school as well as at the university. So it comes back to me as a student. So as parents, to bring in the parents in here, what parents can do when a child gets into a dilemma like this, when they are in, say, 9 or 10, which board to choose, I think ideally, I expect parents to probably do a lot of reading, that's one. Also to talk to a lot of people who are in the field. I do not recommend parents to talk to another parent whose son or daughter has gone to a particular field. The reason is sometimes it is biased and influenced. I can give a number of examples to that. If you listen to a parent who is down the street or maybe in your next door condominium and say, oh, my son went through IB curriculum, he enjoyed the thing, so you send your son to that curriculum as well. It should not become my son went there or my daughter went there, so your daughter can go there and do that. So my son and your daughter or your son and my daughter, they are two different individuals. Their interests are different. Of course, we can provide that platform to those children and let the children make decisions, and we can only stay back and support them. So I'm a bit putting the parents' role in a very cautious way in here. Yes, we need to support, but we should not be swayed by people who can say things, it worked for them, it may not work for you, but take the expert's opinion, like the college counselors. They can give you, if you're studying in, say, AP curriculum, so what you can do in US, what you can do in Canada. If you're studying A-levels, so what you can do in UK, what you can do in Scotland. If you're doing CBSE, how the options open up in India and beyond India. If you're studying IB, how options open up in India and outside India. So the college counselors can answer those questions and support the child as well as the parents. Okay.
So just to like reemphasize that if you want to find out what is going to work for your child, the way to find out is go to a counselor and let the counselor do that job for you.
Yes.
For your child.
Yes. You can always listen to the parent or your friend whose child has gone through this. But at the end of the day, before you make any decision, I would say you speak to an expert as well. Every school has got a college counselor. Again, I put a rider in here. There are the counseling, university counseling is a big business these days. People may not like me saying this, but it is. So in saying that, you don't need to spend a lot of money outside to get the counseling for university placements. Every school has got a university counselor. So let your child or you can speak to the counselors in the schools. Yeah.
Right. This happens at the age of, you said, like grade 9, 10.
Yes.
But in the initial years, for the younger ones, there still are different boards, right? So how does a parent choose at that time? Because I'm sure like that is not the right time to go and, you know, seek a counselor's help. So what can you advise to parents for that age group?
I can. For probably I'll start the answer from there. If you look at an IB curriculum or an Australian curriculum or a New Zealand curriculum where I come from, or an AP or many of these Western boards, they are more of a, you know, if the curriculum is around the child should take the ownership and child should study. It is student-centered. There's a lot of hands-on activities, a lot of skills that they need to work on. So child, by default, has to take the ownership when they are studying these boards. So in CBSE curriculum, it's more of the concept, the information and the theory that is drilled down. And we believe in that the child needs to have those basics correct in the very beginning. So that's why the CBSE curriculum is there. But in saying that, if you have read the new education policy, NEP 2020, see, NEP 2020 has changed a lot. And specifically, they talk about what's called competency-based curriculum, mixing and matching of subjects. So you need not to have, as part of the NEP, a science stream or a humanities stream or a what's called a commerce stream. You can actually mix and match. That's where the CBSE is moving away from the traditional. When I went to school, it was just traditional. You study science, you study science, end of story. Whereas NEP gives an offer of you can pick up a physics and you can pick up a history and study. That's where the IB comes in, where they look at the holistic development, right? So going back to the question on what about in the middle school or primary school, etc., how do you choose a board? Personally, as an educator, being in the field of education, this is my 40th year of teaching, 40. So what I can say in a very simple way is this. In the middle school, in the primary school, it is for the child to acquire that knowledge. That's important. Whether you study an IB curriculum, MYP or a PYP, or you're studying Cambridge Lower Secondary, Cambridge Primary, or you study CBSE in the middle primary or middle school, the curriculum for me in this age group is irrelevant. What I want the children to know is have the strong knowledge built up, the basic understanding of those concepts and ideas, and also develop the skills. But the moment you come down to grade nine upwards, of course, you need to look at based on the strength of the child. So for me personally, as an educationist, middle school, lower secondary school, all these curriculums are almost the same. Some may be a little rigorous. Some may be little, you know, like on the lower side of it. But as parents, we can, if the curriculum is not that rigorous, we can always bring in the additional support. So it is the skill in the middle school and primary school. It's knowledge in the middle school and the primary school. And those skills, you know, when I say skills, it is a 21st century. NEP talks about 4 C's, creativity, critical thinking, collaboration, communication. The children develop all these things. Problem solving automatically comes there. So develop these skills, any knowledge. If I'm teaching, like suppose a middle school, though I teach IB physics in my school, I also make a point to go down to grade 6 and teach 2 lessons a week to grade 6 as well. It is so interesting, you know, that time when I'm teaching at the top, one at the top end, one at the bottom end, I can see the difference in terms of what students are trying, wanting to know and what they already know. So it is basically those knowledge and the skill in the middle school in grade 6. And obviously, when I go to year 12, I talk about how you can actually expand and take it to the next level at the universities so that that's where they are aligned with their career goals, career aspirations thing. So middle school, according to me, everything should be fine. Skills and basic knowledge. Yeah.
So are we saying that initially only IB board was known to have the fluid structure and a wider base, but now even CBSC is offering multiple options and making it more student-centric for them to choose the subject?
Yeah, I think what CBSC as part of the NEP has done, NCERT is doing a lot of workshop these days across India and also in the Middle East and then Singapore and all we have done. Again, what we need to see that CBSE is not diluting the way the subject is being delivered or offered. But what they're trying to do is, as you have rightly put it, Kalyani, is trying to actually make it more open and accessible to children. Because when you say, I may be very good in physics, it is not necessary I want to do a biology with it. So I didn't need to do biology. So I may want to do a physics with something totally different, maybe history, because I like the history and I'm trying to explore what is the physics behind all those monuments that are currently standing as is. Like, suppose there is the pillar in the outside Delhi, which is not rusted. So I can bring in history to physics. So that's where the NEP is giving the offer to children to broaden their horizon of learning ideas and concept, not basically putting it into a box and say, okay, this is where we are going. So which IB obviously is doing for the last 50 plus years, and also various other boards they're trying to do also make sure. Even New Zealand curriculum, it doesn't give the option for you to study only sciences. It is across. You study what's called environmental science, you pick up a mathematics, you pick up some social science.
I think even the arts-related options are also very interesting nowadays for the child.
Yeah.
So music, arts, can they pick it up right from, say, middle school or secondary school?
They can,
school?
Of course, yes. I mean, the specialization, personally, I would say, can happen after year eight. Again, in our school, what we do in the middle school is, in addition to the math, science, social science, English, all the subject, we offer drama, we offer music, we offer dance as a small module. It is for the child to experience those other subjects. Who knows? Ken Robinson has got a very beautiful video which is available on YouTube. The child who is very good in maths is also very good in dance. So it has so happened in one particular case where he is referring to that the mother was hell-bent on making sure that the child does maths, not dance. But the child want to do both. So in that case, I think a lot of Indian parents, including me, for example, say, okay, my child should be doing only this. We try to, put our ideas on top of the child, like we want to see us in our children. But I think as an educational, I would say you take a step back and let's see what our child wants to do, it want to explore. And of course, yes, they can do art, digital art, the visual art. One of my top students in my current cohort, which is writing the board examination, she got into Cambridge to do architecture. She's very good in the math, she's very good in the science, but she's very good in art as well. So obviously she's trying to blend that art as well as the maths and the sciences and want to study the architecture. So that comes together. So I think we need to take a step back and as educators, as parents, we can also see, okay, where is my child good at? And it could be more than one. So we try to support that, yeah.
We've got enough and more examples of stalwarts, of geniuses, right, from Da Vinci to even our own APJ Abdul Kalam, who are very good at the sciences or the STEM part as well as the arts part. Mr. Chris, can you just elaborate a little bit on the Singaporean curriculum? Because especially Singaporean math is gaining popularity worldwide.
Okay. To answer the question, I will probably go back to a message that came across other day on Twitter, where a Singaporean maths question was shared by someone, I think on the Mother SG or something, that platform. Mm-hmm. It's a grade 3 maths question, which is to do with somebody distributing 5 bags of rice to 3 families, something. That's a question. It's a world problem. Now, the child who has answered the question wrote 5 times 8 = 40. So 40 kg in total, the rice bags were distributed. And it was marked wrong. Okay, so I think it is five families and eight rice bags per family. So how many total rice bags? The examiner or the teacher marked it wrong, and there was a lot of discussion on why it's 5 times 8 is 40, you should be correct, and why you're marking it wrong, why you're giving it 0. Because in the comment, the teacher wrote it is 8 times 5. Now, technically 5 times 8 or 8 times 5, both are correct, right? So if you see in mathematical part or side of it, the answer is correct. It's 40 kg of rice that is given. But if you read the question carefully from a Singaporean mathematic model's perspective, the answer is to be 8 times 5, it's not 5 times 8. So that it was marked wrong. As a math teacher, or as a STEM teacher, I agreed with the argument, though a part of mine says that why they got the correct answer. So at the end of the day, it is not the answer that matters in maths. It is a process that matters. So the child got the process wrong. So if you are giving 8 bags of rice to 5 families, so it is 8 that is 1, then you have the 5 families. So distribution was incorrectly explained by the child, though the final answer is correct. So Singapore math is more of, you know, very rigorous, point number one, and it is based on a lot of modeling. So in this particular question, we're talking about modeling of the mathematics. So we get the modeling wrong, just to give another example. So you've got 10 cubes. So if you arrange the 10 cubes in, say, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 kind of thing, you can arrange from 5 to 1, you can arrange from 1 to 5. But if I arrange from 5 to 1, the top 5 then to 1, the cube won't stand because mathematically it is imbalanced, right? The weight won't get distributed properly. So if it's the other way around, if you keep it, it stands properly. So we are looking at the modeling side of it. Singapore math is a lot of modeling. And there are various schools that trying to follow Singapore mathematical modeling, because when you model something, you're trying to explain to a child the core of the mathematics, the basic of the mathematics, how you can apply that in real life. So you can do 8 times 5, 5 times 8, you can memorize and mug up the answer, put it on the paper and come back. But in real life, will you be able to analyze it properly? If I model it, I can actually apply that in an unfamiliar situation anytime, anywhere. That's where Singapore mathematics stands out compared to every other mathematics. And as I said, any part of the world, 5 times 8, 8 times 5, the child will get full 3 marks, but not in Singapore. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
We've experienced this ourselves, because though sometimes when we go and help our children with their math or any other subject, we know the right answer, but it still is not the way they are taught in school. And that's why there is a disconnect and a challenge for the child to learn it the other way as well.
There is a gentleman, he's called Howie, H-O-W-I-E, and Hua, H-O-A. He has a Twitter handle, and he puts a lot of simple, basic mathematical concepts, which anyone, middle school, primary school, high school, they can actually access to his Twitter handle, TikTok, all those things. Very, very interesting and very creative way of explaining. I told this to parents. I was never taught in a subtraction a problem, say 76 minus 25. I was never taught subtract from left to right. We were always taught subtract from right to left, from unit digit to the tens, like that. But you can always get the subtraction from left to right. It still works. But we were never taught, because we always say, this is the way a math is done. You learn, go to the exam, write the answer and come back. That's all we were told. So Singapore math is allowing you to challenge yourself, try different things and try what works, what doesn't work. That's, again, it stands out compared to other maths curriculum.
Right. I was like a little bit curious about, there are some, you know, parents, especially the Indians, have a very academic focus. And some say that I'm not really, you know, I don't care so much about the marks, but I want my child to have a good overall development or focus on the life skills. So could you help us understand which board offers what in what balance?
Okay, again, interesting. I would rather take start from one step behind. The board is already there. Again, I go back to board, curriculum, and the examinations, holistic approach, and how they are supposed to be doing. So if I take their IB, for example, per se, so IB always is on big on holistic approach. That's the reason you offer six subjects. That's the reason they have got an extended essay that they have to do. That's the reason in every subject they have to do an exploration. And that is also the reason why they have a creativity, activity, and service where they go out into the community. They have to do some creativity, some activities that involve creativity, some activities which involve service component, some activities which involve physical activities. They want to see everything together. But the thing is, doing all of this is one, and building it over a period of time is the other. So if I look at British, UK universities mainly give admissions based on the academic focus, academic scores. They're big into academics. If you look at the US universities, Canadian universities, they look at academic as one component. They also look at the holistic. So they want to see what else the child has done in addition to scoring a 45 point in the IB. What they have done, have they done something interesting from their high school years, which they have carried forward? What is the unique point of difference that child has done? Have they created some kind of a project work that helped the community where they're living in? Have they gone out and worked with the old age homes? Have they gone out to some villages and helped them build their houses? Did they spend some time during the year from 9th? It can't be in 1 year. They want to see over a period of time. Have they done it for 3-4 years? Say in our school, we take children to Laos, Cambodia as part of the trips, and we tell the children, whatever you do there, make sure that you are maintaining the connection and you also develop on it, build on it, so that you have a very good portfolio. So US universities wants to see what you have done. If you are very good in basketball, football, badminton, any sports, so what have you done? So apart from attending or representing the school in these sports, so have you represented your region, your country, and what have you done to develop? Have you got the scholarship in studying all these things? So they look at the holistic approach. What is that one point of difference in addition to the academic scores that differentiate between you and candidate A? So why should I choose you for my university, which that candidate A hasn't got? That's where the differential they look at. So a lot of extracurricular activities the children do will always act to acquire top university admissions in the US. But UK, Australia, they are mainly on academic scores. But of course, these activities will add.
So all the higher education goes well beyond curriculums.
Of course, yes.
Coming back to the Indian curriculum, what are the major differences between ICSE and CBSE?
Major difference between ICSE and CBSE. See, I don't. My niece went through ICSE, and I went through CBSE, and many of the kids also went through CBSE. So, what we know, the basic difference is obviously the depth and the number of subject they can study in the ICSE. Whereas if you go to a senior school in the CBSE, you basically come down to those three PCM, PCMB, four subjects, right? Main plus, of course, your languages. Mm-hmm. So you are limiting into those three, four specialized subjects, whereas in ICSE, probably you'll get an additional one or two subject to study so that you have that option of the extra subject. If at all you decide suddenly in the last 6 months of your year 12, oh no, I don't want to be a computer science engineer, I want to study medicine, that option is there. Whereas in the CBSE, you pick up, say, PCMB, computer science is out, so you can't do anything unless you study it as an extra subject or you change later on in the university. Yeah, that's the basic difference. Otherwise, in terms of getting into university admissions, they almost, weigh the same. The weight is almost the same.
Yeah. A lot of, world has become a smaller place today and there are opportunities everywhere in the world. People are traveling. I wanted to understand which is the board which is widely, across every country which is available, and so the parents can choose for their children.
So parents who normally, you know, get transferred or relocate around the globe, their children normally pick up the in the 9 and 10, the IGCSE, and 11, 12 in the IB, because there are a lot of schools which are offering the IGCSE as well as IB. In saying that, these days, all these schools are available in India as well. So anyone who studies IGCSE or IB can easily move between India and Singapore, India and the Middle East, India and all other places in the world as well, because all of these curriculums are offered. So obviously, to take one more step further down, if suppose what happens if a child who is studying currently CBSE 9 and 10 and father gets transferred to US, what happens? They can go and study in the US as well, but probably what they may have to do, because in 9 and 10 and 11, 12, though CBSE has got the physical education as a component, in the US they are very big on the PE as a component. So we need to make sure that there is a recorded or there is a documented information of a child doing the physical education in the 9 and 10, which can be easily transferred in the what's called for the US schools or Canada schools. But generally, I would say IGCSE or PYP, MYP, IB, or CLAC, IGCSE, to extend A-level as well, A-level or the IB diploma program. So those are easy ways to move forward.
Thank you for that. Is it true that if a school is certified as or is offering IB, IGCSE curriculums, they have to mandatorily have a good infrastructure and a certain quality of staff, whereas for other boards, it is not so stringently checked?
That's a very tricky question. So personally, any board that is offering education to the children should not be compromising on the infrastructure or the quality of teachers that the school has got, right? Now, are we having enough checks in terms of the CBSE? CBSE has got the checks, and they are nowadays are very, very strict on giving the affiliation to schools. We have to fulfill all these documentation, and they do a surprise visit. It is there. But it is very, very important. You will not get the certification in the case of IB, IGCSE, or it is Cambridge CAIE, they call Cambridge Association for International Education. So without us submitting the documents, validated documents, verified documents, certification won't come through. And as I said, at the end of the day, any board, but the school should have qualified staff, certified staff, experienced staff, and obviously minimum infrastructure, so that we are supporting every child who enters the gate, and the parents do feel that, yes, this, if a child enters the school's gate, they get good education. So it should be there by default. We should not say, okay, this board is not so strict, so I shouldn't be worried about having a good teacher. If a board or if the management thinks, probably that is not the right way of offering education.
Another question. Yes. So schooling has become something else today, and parental involvement in the studies of our children has increased by many folds. What do you have to say about that?
Okay. I was in the morning meeting, we were talking about helicopter parenting. You know, there are parents who are overly involved in making sure that the child gets good education. So I want to pull that word over out. Involvement is very good. So I always talk when I do the interaction for new admissions, I ask the child as well as the parent one last question. I say, what kind of discussion happens around your dining table every day? That is very important. That's where the starting point, and that's where the end point is, because the child who goes home should be able to share with the parents what happened in the school, what went well, what didn't go well, what teacher has said, what they've learned. At the same time, parents should be able to listen to the child and see what else they can do if there is anything that they need to do. Okay, so that's very important. Involvement is very, very good. Now, also what is important is parents to make sure that they are in regular contact with the school. When I say regular contact, maybe once a month. Every school runs those parent-teacher meetings, right? They run maybe once a term, once a semester. But I, as a parent, should not be waiting for that once a semester meeting to happen to come and meet the teacher. So I can always call the parent, call the school and say, hey, I want to come down and have a meeting with a particular teacher. I want to see what's happening. So parent involvement is one they need to keep in mind. At the end of the day, I always say, because they pay the fees, right? So they have the right to see what's happening in the schools. But at the same time, they also need to know that they have to trust the school. Of course, the child have, they have trusted, when they have put the child in the school, the trust is a very big issue. So they should feel that, yes, I put my child in this particular school. This school has got a track record of providing good education to children, and therefore I can be assured that the education will be provided, and involvement is only provided when it is required. But I should not be jumping up and down just because in one test, without referring to anyone. I had a meeting last week where a parent spent about 40-odd minutes with me talking about one examination the child has scored very less, how that particular exam score is going to impact on their future education. The answer is no, it won't impact. There is one blip. It will happen. And it is the case. So as long as we as parents do not get overly anxious, overly hyped because of these minor things, stay behind, support the child, trust the school, and always have that open communication between school and home, absolutely fine. Let it flow. That's all I would say. Don't be like a helicopter parent. Yeah.
Since you mentioned helicopter parents, I would like to add one more point here, is that parents put their children for tuitions right from P1.
Yes.
I would like to know what your comments would be.
You can ask anybody NPS parents who come to NPS. I always tell in the orientations, never send your children to any tuition centers. If you have that extra money, I say every year that extra money, you put it in the bank, and when your child graduates, take them on a cruise, I tell them. It's very simple. When you are paying the fees to the school, it is a responsibility of the school to make sure that the child gets that education. So if there is for some reason your child was absent because of 3 days because of ill health, he or she has missed that information. Information is available in learning management system. The child can go through, talk to their friends and try to find out what he or she has missed. But still, if there are gaps that they need to address, we will offer additional support after school. Do not send children to the tuition centers. In saying that, again, in the senior school, tuition has become kind of a fashion. My child goes to tuition, therefore my neighbor's child also is going to tuition. Honestly, what happens there in tuition center, they go and sit there and maybe work on some worksheets, past papers, they do a one-to-one session, and the teacher explains how this problem is being done. That can be done in the school as well. I am against tuition. No tuition, definitely not. Don't spend the money, put it in the bank and let it earn some interest.
Yes, and nowadays because of digitalization, it's like an equalizer. So you can always access the videos. Schools do share videos as well and helps with homework which comes in emails. So catching up is much, much easier.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Google Bard was released last week. So there's a competition for ChatGPT, and Google Bard is one step ahead. It actually allows you to even straight away email or copy to your Google Doc the information. See, all these ChatGPT and Google Bard, again, there's a lot of discussion in our school as well, parents talking, how do you stop children cheating by downloading information answer from these artificial intelligence portals? I always say you cannot stop them. It is there. Right? But you encourage at home, if suppose your child has got a homework and types on Google Bard or a ChatGPT, gets the answer, copies down. That's where the parent needs to come in. Typing the question, getting the answer on the AI is good. So as a student, now you can ask your child, okay, this is the answer you got from ChatGPT or Google Bard. Okay, can you read through that, rephrase it? What is the answer is there? Why that is the answer? So let the child take that as a starting point, or go in ChatGPT's language, they say, use it as a spark. So that's your spark, and develop around that your answer. So you should be fine. As I said, AI is going to change the way we actually learn things. It is definitely there. Yes.
Thank you so much. You really shared a lot of insights, not only into the curriculum aspect from the school point of view, but also touching on the parents' anxieties and how should we as a parent look at overall selection of curriculums and schools. So thank you so much for joining us today. It was indeed a pleasure, and we look forward to more interaction.
I thought it's a good discussion that we had.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kalyani.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bhatt. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Before signing off, we have a small request. If you like what we do, please subscribe to us on the app you're listening to, give us a 5-star rating, and drop us a review. Your small actions make a big difference to us. Please do share our podcast with your friends and family to help them raise happy and confident children. If you'd like to know more about Partners in Upbringing, do visit our website, partnersinupbringing.com. We also conduct parenting webinars with experts. So if you would like to organize one exclusively for your school or organization, do drop us a message on Facebook or Instagram at Partners in Upbringing, or you can email us on contact@partnersinupbringing.com. We would love to hear from you. If you have a feedback or a comment or a suggestion, or if you would like us to cover a particular topic on the podcast, please do write to us. Meet you again in the next episode of Partners in Upbringing with another topic and a new expert or an inspiring parent. Until then, goodbye, stay safe, and happy parenting.
The content of this podcast is the copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://www.partnersinupbringing.com for further details.